Und jetzt mach ich eine Arschbombe.
Ja, hello and welcome to the 119th
episode
is difficult for Germans
of the Freifunkradio from Berlin. Today yes. We are talking in English because we have many interviews that you did in English at yes. the Battle Mesh.
In Cyprus, yes, I attended the latest Battle Mesh in Cyprus, and we met there, and you heard our lovely pool sound in the beginning, and it was a nice event there.
Battle Mesh number 19?
It's number 16.
16.
So the 16th episode of the Battle Mesh or version, it's always V16, for example. And yes, we have been about 30 people there in Cyprus, and it was kind of exciting because in Cyprus it's still a divided country, the last divided capital in Europe. And
Berlin feeling.
Yeah, we had a bit of Berlin feeling crossing the border. You had to show your ID cards or passports, and of course we visited both parts of Cyprus. The event itself was in the northern part of Cyprus, and we started in Nicosia, the capital, with some. We got introduced to some projects where people try to work together, people from the north and the south, and come together and work over this conflict they have between those two groups there. And yes, that was one of the reasons why the Battle Mesh was there, because the initiator of this
event,
Arinj, wanted to... make us aware of this conflict and how the people deal with it, and also wanted to bring together people from the north and the south, and with the help of us battle measures.
So unlike the East German wall, it's easy for the people from the northern part, which is Turkish yes. governed, and the southern part, which
it's the Republic of Cyprus, and the northern part is also, they announced their own republic, the Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus, and but the Turkish military is there, and
so kind of not so open yeah. and free republic.
But it's relatively easy to cross the border. You just show your ID and passport, and then it's done. And they have
there's no travel restrictions from people from the south of Cyprus to the north and vice versa.
That started in 2003 or 2004. Mm-hmm. So it's the conflict is 50 years old, and that they are able to cross the border again is 20 years ago.
So people from the southern part and from the northern part attended the event?
Yeah, at least the organizer, he was from the northern part, and I guess two or three other people were there, and also some people from the southern part, but it's not the big, very big group. Most of the people came from Germany, Europe, and some from South America.
And do they have a community wireless network there?
Not. I have not seen that. Temporarily, they had at least at the location where the event took place.
Yeah. Well, we're now 4 minutes into the broadcast, and we only have like 10 minutes for our chat, so we should start with one of the recordings.
Yes, maybe we start with a short interview with Jura. He came from Brazil, and I talked to him about why he came to the Battle Mesh and what he's doing there. So
Jura from Brazil.
Yes,
I'm from Brazil. I work with community networks. this. I'm here because I'm. This is my first time in Betelmesh. Of many years I was trying to come to this event. And I'm here because APC called me to come and mm-hmm. say can support me and is to know these people personally, because we just meet online, and it's so important to see people in the eyes and to know who we are and who are working with mm-hmm. us. And yes.
And so you enjoyed so far being here in the pool at the sea.
yeah, it also it's really good. My second time in Europe,
mm-hmm.
and my first time in Cyprus. It's really nice to be here and to know this different environment.
Yeah. Okay, and what community networks are you working on in Brazil?
I work with many ones, but I live in one community. Called the Portal Sem Porteiras in Portuguese. That is an association,
mm-hmm.
a civil society organization, that helps people to improve our connection and the digital environment. And we help another communities to create their own community network.
Okay, and that's also based on wireless networks, and or is it a combination of wired and wireless networks? And
yeah. This we build a wireless network, a mesh wireless network, using LibreMesh, and we do all of this build firmware, fix equipments, and change firmwares. And,
okay.
Yeah, and we have this mesh network and wider network, and sometimes we try to work with different kind of networks. Like we are trying now to work with LoRa. We are trying to implement some tools in the network, like artificial intelligence, like tools that we can use in the school, mm-hmm. because we have a school in the community. And then now we have this project to expand the network, to increase the network, to help this school that is far away in the community, like 4 kilometers.
Okay.
It's a rural area,
mm-hmm.
and then the school don't have internet, don't have connection.
There's no connection at all.
And then we are trying to use our community network to expand there and to help this people.
Okay, very interesting. And do you also use the Libre router hardware?
Yeah, we have like 10 Libre routers. Over 5 years. This first Libre router was used there, outside of Argentina, was
okay.
in mm-hmm. my community, and we are using, and we help with some reports and some things that we help to improve in the router was made there.
And you also help with software development and having a Google Summer of Code contributor this year.
Yeah, my first time in the Google Summer for Code,
mm-hmm.
and I'm originally physicist. I'm mm-hmm. not a programmer. I'm not a developer, but I'm trying to learn and to help the code, open codes, and it's really nice because when this code is open, it's possible to more people learn, and I'm learning, and I'm trying to help and to contribute the same way.
Okay, that's great.
Which reminds me that I'm against bans and laws, but leaf blowers are certainly something that should be banned.
Yeah, maybe some apologies for the sound.
Yeah, better audio because the leaf blower was so prominent.
Yeah, and it was just a small recording device we used for the field recordings. But the good one, that's the one we use right now for recording this episode too. Yeah, okay. It was very interesting. So we should consider having a battle mesh maybe in South America somewhere.
Whoa. That's a terrible long flight.
Yeah, but it was also a terrible long flight for them to
to come to here. Yeah. But yeah, of course, it would be more colorful and more open. So yeah, not too much European focused.
There were too many Germans at the battle mesh anyways.
Are we heading on to the next recording? I think you also recorded Daniel Golle, who's a developer for OpenWRT.
Yes.
Was that next in your list, or do you have something else?
We can do that. Maybe some words to introduce the next interview. OpenWRT has its 20th anniversary this year, and for this anniversary, some people thought we do something very special. We create an own router that is also called OpenWRT1, and the Battle Mesh was that event where the router was presented to the public for the very first time. So before, we just saw some screenshots or pictures of the board, but there we could touch it, we could feel it, we could connect it to the power, and we saw the first devices and
revision 0.0,
something like that.
No, it's the revision 0.0.
Okay. And Daniel gave an introduction to this router, and let's listen to that now.
The reason why we're doing this is that OpenWRT will be 20 years old this year. This all means that we've gotten very, very old in a way. That's the primary talking point here, that we are, oh my God, 20 years we're doing this. So it's been a while, and in 20 years there have been multiple engagements to try to get some points across to the hardware manufacturers, but up to now OpenWRT mostly runs its operating system on third-party hardware. This is becoming increasingly difficult because the hardware vendors more and more decide to go down a locked boot kind of approach, and also some of the, like, of course, off-the-shelf hardware is not good for experimentation. So in December, a few OpenWRT developers got together, and we were thinking, should we design a hardware for OpenWRT for the 20th birthday as a reference? The intention is not, I repeat, not to create a high-end router or Wi-Fi 7 access point which can, in terms of performance, compete with off-the-shelf devices you can buy for less money in a plastic case. Rather, the intention is to create a device suitable for experimentation, research and development, and, you know, for interested enthusiasts to try new things or just run OpenWRT on a hardware which is officially very good supported by OpenWRT. Initially, we were considering to build something more high-end in terms of performance. We were considering a 10 gigabit SoC and Wi-Fi 7 chips. But, you know, being five or four people in the room talking about this, we quickly realized that our ideas about how this should be done were quite diverse. It was very difficult to find, this is the most important thing we want to do, and now this is more important, and then we want to do this. So it kind of became complicated, and also the cost added to it quickly, you know, went up quite a bit. Then we kind of, you know, just as an experiment, we looked at the other end and said, okay, good, so if we build a device which is just a simple access point at the lowest possible specs, then interestingly, all the people in the room immediately agreed on everything. And we were like, okay, yeah, this is how it's supposed to look like. And they were, okay, good, that was a very easy conversation. And so we went ahead. The OpenWRT 1 is based on MediaTek's MT7981 SoC, which, other than other MediaTek SoCs, was never intended by MediaTek to be a part of vanilla Linux or even supported by OpenWRT. The more powerful SoCs, like the MT7986, which is also in the Banana Pi R3 and many, many other, you know, off-the-shelf plastic devices, has always been, you know, has been pushed to the Linux kernel and to OpenWRT by MediaTek themselves. The 7981 is like the smaller sister of the 7986. It has only two instead of four cores. It has only one interface for an external Wi-Fi front-end, but it's very low cost and the number of external components is extremely low, so it makes the design very, very easy. And I was very impressed when I saw the first devices with that chip roughly a year and a half ago. But this chip didn't have support in OpenWRT nor the Linux kernel. However, it's fairly similar to the 7986. So with the help of some hardware vendors, GLINET among them, I've been sent some samples, and I've basically, from knowing what the chip is more or less looks like and that the 7986 is very similar to it. We've, as a community effort, created support for it in Vanilla Linux and OpenWRT, which also kind of makes it more, you know, the it's a grassroots software project from day one. So that's why we also choose this chip. Because the number of external components is very low, and because the software stack, including the Wi-Fi drivers, are by now well working and tested and are created by the community from the first day. As features, we wanted to have something which is extendable. So instead of, you know, in many of those router boards, you see that they kind of imitate the Raspberry Pi GPIO header, for example. Many of the Banana Pi boards have that. But it's not as generic as you might think, because having a 26-pin header, that's quite a lot of pins. You usually don't have that amount of spare pins on the SOC, so it's always a kind of compromise, and, you know, hardware intended to run on Raspberry Pi's 26-pin header may or may not work on some host boards which have that pin header, just because not all of the pins are used in that way as they would be used on the Raspberry Pi 3 or 4. For that reason, we decided to instead use a microbus connector, which you can see here on the board with a display connected to it, and here you can see it without anything populated. Microbus is a kind of generic gray bus. That means it has a mixed bag of digital and analog signals and buses. It has I2C and SPI. But it also has analog PWM output. It has a UART, and you can use most of the pins also as just plain GPIOs. So this allows for the connection of a wide amount of so-called click modules, which you can buy for a little money, and there are literally hundreds of them. And most of them, of course, there's very simple hardware which basically just uses two pins there and switches on or off something like a LED. But there's also much more advanced ones. For example, you can have A2211AH Halo Wi-Fi interface in the 900 or in Europe 860 megahertz range, or you can have LoRaWAN for high distance, low bandwidth communication. There's lots of things you can stick into microbus. The interesting thing is that microbus right now in these days is being upstreamed as a standardized bus interface in the Linux kernel, which basically means, other than how it was previously, that now if you wanted to add additional hardware to a board, you would have to modify the device tree. You would have to eventually, if you wanted to do it smart, you would create a device tree overlay file which would be applied if that external peripheral is added to the board. However, the device tree overlays still were specific to that very, very board. So they had to be recreated, and I think you can see that on the Alviner hardware on the Sun Xi, where people went through like large effort to create a huge repository with all sorts of things added to it. But it's a lot of files, and it's a hell to maintain for them, because they need to recreate all this device tree overlays for every SOC and for every board. And that's obviously like fans out quite enormously. So with microbus now, what is being created in these days, or upstream these days rather, it's created already, is a generic interface in the Linux kernel to define in the device tree, this is a gray bus socket, and these are the pins of the SOC connected to it. These are the different pin control options for each pin to be either a UART or a GPIO, an SPI bus or a GPIO, and so on and so on. All this can be defined in the device tree, and that means that all these click modules can be device tree overlays, which are generic. They can be added to every board which has a defined microbus interface. The OpenWRT 1 will be the first router board to feature this interface, and hence make it a very good target for research or creation of new hardware using those click modules instead of like fiddling around with jumper wires and breadboards, which is usually painful. I've been through it. Apart from that, we thought that we wanted to create a hardware which is PoE powered, so that it would be suitable as an access point. The reason why we choose to go for an access point is simply also because there are many, many router boards available, and there are also many operating systems for routers. Whereas access points, OpenWRT kind of is in its unique niche. There are no good other Wi-Fi operating systems, to be honest. Whereas for routing, you will find a bunch, some based on embedded Linux, some based on BSD, and you know, for firewalls and routing, there are different operating systems, and we are not, how to say, it's not our unique strength, actually. Our unique strength as OpenWRT, in my opinion, is that we have a good integration of Wi-Fi drivers, as well as host APD and NetFD working together to do even crazy things like a repeater on the same radio, which is not possible with any other Linux distribution I'm aware of, and its downstream patches, which will probably never be upstream. So in order to emphasize on that strength, we all thought it's a good idea to create an access point hardware which is small and could potentially also be, you know, in a wall mount plate kind of case, which we kind of need help to design. Anybody knows somebody who is good with like 3D design, creating plastic cases, please reach out and let's get to talk about how a plastic case could look like. There has been a sponsorship offer we've received for the tooling of plastic mold cases. So even though the initial cost for this is usually typically very high, in our case it would not be very high. So if we manage to create a case with, you know, two parts clipped together, for example, then that would be something feasible and doable. Thank you. That's for John.
Yeah. Yeah, the introduction to OpenWRT 1 by Daniel Golle.
Yes, and maybe we can convince him to make a deep dive together with us at a Freifunk Radio, at a later Freifunk Radio, so we can get much more details about the device.
Yep.
Yeah, and we also had other participants for example, Rory Solomon from New York City. He is a researcher and a professor at a university in New York City, and also user and helper of the
New York City wireless.
Yes, and that's our next interview we have here. And
yeah, we are running out of time, so
yeah,
give it a go.
My name is Rory Solomon. And I'm visiting here from New York City, where I live, where I am a assistant professor of culture and media at the New School University. And I'm also the director of a program called Code as a Liberal Art, which is a hybrid theory practice program, kind of like a critical computer science program. It teaches coding classes and also kind of like media studies and cultural studies about sort of the history and theory of media technology. So they're hybrid classes. And this is my fourth Battle Mesh.
Oh, wow.
So I came in 2017, 18, 19. And then 2020, I sort of participated through Zoom.
It was the online version of it, yes.
And then I had to miss the last 2 years, partly because of my new job and also because I have a new child. It was also second job. Thank you. But she's two now, so I was able to come back to revisit Battle Mesh this year. And I was really interested to visit this year when I read Arantxa's kind of proposal about Cyprus and why to have it here and the Cyprus problem and the conflict about these two territories and like all the sort of things that like a mesh-oriented gathering could sort of benefit from and also intervene in this kind of conflict, like thinking about networking as it relates to like geopolitical conflict and stuff. So it seemed like a really interesting, of all the battle meshes, this seemed like a particularly interesting site to make sure to visit. Yeah. So I wanted to make sure to come. Like historically, how I got interested in this is like similar to, I think, almost everybody here, or most people at least. Like my background's in computer science. I was working at a financial software company for some years. And just wanted to find like a project to contribute to, or like something better that I could do with my skills in the world other than just working for like corporate America, software development, whatever. And so I started thinking about a lot of these open source projects, like in particular, I was thinking about distributed or decentralized social media platforms. Like at the time, Diaspora was just coming out and some NYU students were developing it, which is pretty close to where I was. So I was interested in that. And then thinking about things like Mastodon, and the more I kind of started thinking about it, the more interested I was getting in ideas about like questions like, can digital infrastructure even exist in a way that's sort of like not commercial or, you know, like not owned by large institutional mm-hmm. entities? And so I started thinking about these community-oriented cooperative infrastructure projects and mesh networks, and I started getting really interested in trying to learn more about that.
Yeah. And here we can see a lot of very good examples of it.
Tons, yeah.
From Argentina and
yes.
from the GriefyNet people that are not here this year, unfortunately, but
yeah.
there are a lot of those examples. Are you all also connected to the New York Mesh project?
Yeah, yeah. So basically, when I started thinking about learning more about this kind of community infrastructure, I also was starting my doctoral program. So I made my PhD thesis about mesh networks and digital community infrastructure. And the first place I visited was Battle Mesh in 2017,
okay.
which was perfect because it was everybody from around the world coming together. I learned about all the projects in one place, and then I got to go out and visit all these other specific projects. Mm-hmm. So I visited Giphy, I visited Serentapuro, Freifunk, obviously, yep. and then I came back home to New York City, and I started going to the NYC Mesh meetings. Mm-hmm. So I'm a I have an NYC Mesh node on my roof, and I'm a member. yeah, and I volunteered on a couple installs with them, and I haven't been as active recently, but yeah, I definitely am a fan of that project.
Yeah, I think for most of those projects, the most important thing is to run a node at home and to help where you can. And
yeah. Yeah, I was excited to look at the map and see that at some point there was a couple people downstream mm-hmm. from me. So I was actually, you know, contributing to the spread of the yeah. network. And I live in a neighborhood that's changing a lot. It was used to a part of New York City in Queens called Ridgewood. It used to be more residential, like working class kind of, and now it's mm-hmm. getting, you know, like everything, it's like hipster gentrification waves. Mm-hmm. So there's more and more young people moving there. And so I've noticed this demographic has a lot of interest in NYC Mesh. So I've started to see more nodes popping up. And there's other new community spaces in my neighborhood. Yeah. There's like a mutual aid organization and like a very political bookstore and other community groups that are starting to pop up and support and participate in NYC Mesh.
All right, then.
Yeah, that was just few of the interviews I recorded there, but unfortunately we only have this half an hour.
Well, we can do it the next time and send more interviews.
Or maybe you attend the next Battle Mesh.
I'll certainly attend the next Battle Mesh because it's not that far.
Yeah, we can now unveil where the next Battle Mesh will take place. It will be again in Germany. It will be in the middle of Germany.
In Saxony?
No, it's Thuringia.
Thuringia, I'm sorry.
But it's hard to get there because it's a small village. You may have heard about it in one of our episodes. It's Sundhausen in Thuringia. You may have heard Bluse in some of our episodes talking about the Sundhausen network. And he promised that he will make the Sundhausen network to the a test bed for Battle Mesh, so we can test all the routing protocols and so on. And you can also test the fiber connections and the quantum encryption thingies he is researching on. Yes, and that will be next year in June. I think it's June 10th or 11th. It's after Pfingsten. I don't know what Pfingsten is in English.
Me neither. I'm not into
but for
Christian
the people
holidays.
For the people who are interested, it's the week after Pfingsten. And yes, it will be again for 1 week, not only 2, 3, or 4 days like the last Battle Meshes. So we plan to have it the whole week from Tuesday to Tuesday.
And it's camping.
And it's most probably camping. There are some beds to rent around the villages, but it's not that much you can find there. So
bring your tent.
Bring your own tent. Bring your own Wi-Fi router and come to the Battle Mesh.
Yes. Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah.
Well, so the last 15 seconds. Yeah, if you made it this far, we thank you very much for listening to our broadcast and podcast, which will be published after this broadcast. Yeah.
And if you have ideas or want to be part of it, just message us.
Just join us.
Yeah. Okay, so bye-bye.
Bye-bye.